This is Reverend Wynn Henderson. I'm reading today from my book, Freedom from Addiction, Roman numeral 2. This is chapter 15, How God Revealed His Healing Plan for Addiction. In order for you to be able to believe that you can get well from addiction, I am now going to tell you my story. Every word of this story is true, provable, and documentable. But I don't want my personal drama to take away from God's story. And so, in this edition, I have abridged the longer version, which you can find in the previous edition, Freedom from Addiction. This addiction treatment program was very important and special to God. He provided all the things needed in order to get this message out to the world. This is not my program. It's God's plan, and that is why it always works, because God never makes mistakes. In the 80s, I opened a single physician outpatient family practice in Knoxville, Tennessee. It quickly became evident that many of my new patients were addicted to mood-altering medications, Valium in particular. These had been prescribed by their previous doctors. At the time, the government was making a lot of noise about doctors over-prescribing medications, and several physicians in my community had been warned. The government began checking all the pharmacies, and within a year, DEA and FBI agents considered me a person of interest because I was in the middle of a clinical study into Valium addiction, and it was generating large numbers of prescriptions. The government started harassing my patients and employees, trying to find something I was doing wrong in respect to my prescribing of Valium. However, they never came to me to ask directly why I was writing a large number of prescriptions for that particular drug. They also tried to find some fraud in my billing system. I took all my medical files downtown and had people going through them trying to find something illegal. Still, after a year of continuous investigation, they had found no evidence of wrongdoing. During this time, I had a problem with one of my employees who was also the clinic manager. I discovered she was stealing drugs from the pharmacy for resale on the street. When I had my attorney draw up a legal document where she had to admit her guilt, she became angry. I had done this to try to control her behavior. In retrospect, this was a big mistake. It was an example of my own codependency control addiction. Knowing that she could get in serious trouble if I reported her stealing from our pharmacy, she started collaborating with the FBI to protect herself from her illegal activities. She wore a wire for the government and arranged numerous discussions with me regarding the ongoing FBI, DEA, investigation. She told me that she would get the government investigation stopped, but she wouldn't say how, if I would put $30,000 into a fund for her kids' college educations. I agreed. She was very convincing, as she was a sociopath. but I would not give her the money directly. I thought I was delivering the money to her investment broker, but he turned out to be an FBI agent. The government was trying to entrap me into a crime of attempted bribery of a government agent. Like a sheep to the slaughter, I stepped into a well-laid trap. I found myself in a staged trial that smeared my reputation all over the newspapers, with a judge who would not allow my defense team to put on a witness who could interpret the wire tapes and vindicate me. My defense team, in preparation for the federal trial, had conducted two mock trials. In both of these trials, I was found not guilty. But in the federal trial, I was found guilty. In a typical intimidation scenario, many months later, federal prosecutors threatened me with a longer sentence and the possibility of involving my elderly parents if I did not capitulate and plead guilty to at least one count of overprescribing Valium. Backed into this impossible legal corner and depleted of all assets to fight, I picked an unlikely patient and completed the statement they wanted, even though I had done nothing wrong. When my experience with the federal government was over, I had a private investigator find that patient that the government had forced me to lie about, and she signed a document stating that she had only gotten the normal amount of Valium for the 2 months I was treating her. In November 1990, I found myself in a holding cell, which was dark 23 hours a day. This was sheer torture, and I felt completely isolated, unloved, and violated. The first weeks were filled with strong emotion as I prayed and tried to figure out why I was here. I felt incredibly violated for trusting in a system that did not do the right thing. I began to really question my life and cried out to God to let me know why I was stuck in this dark hole. God did not take long giving me the answer. In a dream vision, he told me, "You possess the knowledge and experience to write a book that I want written about addiction. If you choose to accept this mission, I will protect you while you are in prison. I will provide all the materials you need to write the book and the money to publish it. Finally, you will be released when the book is published." When God wants to work in your life, he often gives you a dream about yourself, about what he wants you to do, about how he's going to use your life to impact the world. There is a rich history in the Bible of God giving his children dreams for their lives. God gave Noah the dream of building an ark. He gave Abraham the dream of being the father of a great nation. God gave Joseph the dream of being a leader that would save his people. He gave Nehemiah the dream of building the wall around Jerusalem. In the history of the Bible, the foremost way that men knew that God had spoken to them was through prophecy. Prophecy means to predict or reveal through written or spoken words divine inspiration. If a prophecy that was attributed to God later came true, it was assumed that it came from God. The more unlikely the prophecy, the more the believability that it had indeed come from God. Now, everyone I shared this prophecy with was convinced that I had lost my mind. They labeled it jailhouse religion. I, on the other hand, believed that God's promise to me was real, and I set about writing the book. In that instant that I accepted my mission, I was spiritually transformed. I was born again. I looked around me and saw only my Bible and a few meager personal belongings. Yet I felt a happiness in my heart that I had never felt before. The prison system is not conducive to creative endeavors. Often napkins became my notepaper, and with the lights off 23 hours a day, I was forced to go to the end of the cage to get enough light to write. Eventually, I was transferred to another facility that had better arrangements. And the entire time, God kept me safe from harm, fulfilling the first prophecy. He produced the funds, $5,000, to publish the book by way of a gift from a fellow prisoner, fulfilling the second prophecy. When I received a copy of the book in the mail, I remembered God's promise to me that I would be released when the book was completed. And here is the fantastic fulfillment of the third part of the prophecy. Within 40 hours after receiving the book, a guard came to my cell and announced that I was going home, fulfilling the third prophecy. My sentence was 33 months, but I had only served 24. Remember, there is no parole in the federal system. The chance of those three events happening by coincidence would be much smaller than the chance of winning the lottery. Nope, this was no coincidence. This was a fulfilled promise of God. Yes, this is God's plan, not mine. I am merely the messenger. And this is why this addiction program always works. It works because it's God's plan, and God never makes mistakes.